Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Justin Ray, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show, I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Friday night edition of Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. Pleased to be with you here on Blog Talk Radio, and we have a great show for you today. Aaron Brink is on the line with us now, and, you know, I got to tell you, Aaron has been a friend of the program. I consider him a personal friend going back probably about 8 years now, and I really admire him. I really do, because you know, he's someone that's struggled, and he's gotten his act together, and he's living a very, very disciplined life. I remember the last time we spoke to him on this program, he was just a changed man, a refocused man, and now he's going to be fighting for the Gladiator Challenge Heavyweight Championship versus Dave Huckaba. I believe that's October 15th. We're going to talk about that and a lot more, and without further ado, let's bring him on the program. Aaron, how are you, man?
I'm doing good. Thank you very much. How are you doing, sir?
Good, good, good. You're someone, Aaron, we've had on over the years. We love talking to everyone we can get on the show, but there are some people that we feature on a regular basis here because they provide quality interviews, and the fans want to keep up with their individual lives, and Aaron Brink is definitely one of those guys. And you've had some classic appearances here on Carson's Corner with yourself and Dan Quinn. So it's great to have you on the show again.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. And I'm glad to be here.
Let's talk about your fight career and what you got coming up. I know you got another fight with Gladiator Challenge. Listeners of our show are going to be excited to know that you're fighting Dave Huckaba, a well-known name to them. But before we get to that, I want to talk about anything that's happened since we last spoke. I think about the fighting style of Aaron Brink, and it definitely fits with the philosophy of the Gladiator and the kill, be killed, you know, sort of a fight style that we've seen you embody in those classic matchups over your career. And most recently, you've been on the wrong side of that aggression when you fought Sean Loeffler, and he's a very, very intimidating fighter. What were your impressions of him as an opponent before the fight?
Leading up to Sean the Destroyer Loeffler, I had a lot of mixed feelings about it. In my opinion, it wasn't the best matchup for me. You know, facing a guy who's at the top of the food chain in the sport of mixed martial arts, He's, you know, he's a middleweight. You know, he walks around at about 215, 210. I mean, he's just a really dangerous guy. And I almost kind of thought to myself, I can't really pick and choose my fights. I was going to take whatever fight I can get. And Gladiator came up with that. I had a game plan going in to fight Sean Loeffler, and I was really nervous. I had my game plan was to, you know, get on top and control him, and I got caught going in. You know, hats off to Sean Loeffler, man. He's an amazing athlete, and I commend him big time.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say that it was a pretty strange fight while it lasted. I mean, to recap what happened for the folks at home, you came out very aggressively and quickly walked down Sean, and some would say charged him, and then he threw a counter hook. You stumbled and appeared to hit your head on a cage or fence, and he threw another shot or two on the ground, and then the referee jumped literally on top of you and flattened you like a pancake. And it was a TKO win for Loeffler at 4 seconds of round one. I mean, obviously that could have been your most disappointing performance from a statistical perspective. Is that basically an accurate assessment of what happened? I mean, what do you think went wrong from your perspective?
Absolutely. That's a very accurate assessment of what happened that night. I was looking for a place to go to sleep, and Sean Loeffler helped me out with that. But, you know, not to be funny, I was actually charging in on him. I was trying to get in and pressure him and put my weight on him and try to get up. Instead of come out standing up with him, I had been working a lot on my wrestling, and I was in the best shape of my life. I was strong. I just won Naga. I won in the expert division. I got a belt for Naga. I was very confident on the ground, so I was going to come out and try to take Loeffler down. And as I was coming in, I just kind of forgot the basics, you know, just come out there and set it up, and, you know, stick, move, instead of just rushing in. And as I was coming in and bull rushing in, I caught that hook, and it was lights out. It was a light switch off. Next thing I remember, I don't remember the head hitting the cage, all that stuff. That's all stuff that happened after the lights were out. I just remember looking up at the ceiling and going, oh, wow, here we are. That's the fastest I've ever been finished in a fight.
That was going to be my next question. Is the first thing that came to mind was whether or not the impact of your head hitting the cage was a factor in the loss. It almost looked like you stumbled rather than went out from the punch, but you stayed down after the impact with the cage. Is that accurate, or am I off base there?
I would say that what's accurate is that I lost the time. Once the hook was landed, I reassessed it by looking at the fight, and it's basically coming in, the side hook coming in, getting caught with that, which was an excellent game plan. I talked to John, his coach. I'm actually training with Sean now over at the compound. I went over and humbled myself, and Sean has actually been a really amazing. Yes, he is now coaching me, and is my training partner now. And we've actually gone over some stuff. And what happened was is that when I came in, I got caught with the hook, and there was the face hitting the face. It's unfortunate, but it wasn't the cause of the knockout. I think it was more of the hook, and then whatever the shots he landed after I went face first, or I went into the fence. Those were what sealed the deal. And then ended up, I kind of remember, okay, wait a minute, I can look it up at the scent, and I kind of recall just vaguely looking back at it. Remembering that, those were what sealed the deal.
What about the referee jumping on top of you? Was that the right thing to do? Did he protect you, or did he hold you down while waving it off too quickly?
I think that was a good stoppage. I would call it it's unfortunate. Okay, I'm going to be humble and just tell you this. That fight could have gone differently, but I didn't like my chances against a guy that's it's a middleweight. He's the top of the food chain right now. He's contending weight. I mean, he's got like the last. He's got dreams. He's got like those 12 wins. He's come out with 12 wins. He's contending in Bellator. He finished Pat Smith like it was nothing. There's no surprise that maybe that fight would have been maybe it could have gone bad for me later on by submission or something else, but. I'm not going to say anything that would be derogatory to my friend and my coach Sean. So he's really coming to bat for me. He's opened his facility up to me, and just being honest. I'm not going to make light of a situation. I'm just going to own it, dust myself off, and prepare myself for Dave Huckabee. on the 15th of October.
Yeah, we're going to get to that for sure. How did the loss, a loss like that, impact you psychologically? Is it more frustrating than anything else, Aaron?
The loss, losing like that, I took some time off. I meditated. It affected me greatly. It kind of sent me off in a whirlwind, and you know, kind of a situation where I almost fell back into the entire like bad scene and the whole bad lifestyle again. My son actually changed his name. Nobody's really. I haven't gone public about this. My actually son actually went to court and asked for a name change to have his name changed to a different last name. He's being teased at school about having my last name or whatever, which
really?
I don't blame him. Yeah, I went through a lot after that, but I just, you know, I humbled myself and I said, you know what, where I live 2 miles from Sean Loeffler's gym. And I went there and I was like, this place is the most amazing gym I've ever trained at in my career of mixed martial arts. And he's a good coach. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to humble myself and come to you. Will you help me get better? Show me what I did wrong. You've obviously been watching tapes on me. You figured out, you know, I came into that fight about 230 pounds, as strong as ever. You know, I've never been in such good shape. Like, how did I lose this fight? What did I do wrong? And him and his coach, they've all broken it down to me. And we got a plan for Dave Huckabee to move forward. I couldn't dwell on it anymore. I just dusted myself off. I patched up the wounds, and I'm moving forward. I have to move forward because I want to end my career with a W, you know, strap a belt around my waist and get out that way. And I know all the work that I'm doing right now over at the compound with the best training partners, the best coach, and all the facility, everything, and everything's going to go the way it needs to go. And I'm going to strap that belt on October 15th.
What are your thoughts on the current status of your career, and how are you viewing the immediate future?
Okay, the time you said times, the time you're referring to?
Yeah, but right now, currently, the current status of your career and you know, the future.
Okay, but right now, I'm just going to be realistic. I'm at the latter part, if not the end of my career. You know, fighting Dave Huckabee, it's a realistic fight for me. He's a very tough guy. There's nothing to take away from Dave Huckabee. He's seen his better days, and then I think he's on the other side of his prime, and I say the same thing about myself. However, he and I are, you know, we're both in the same position, and that's like, hey, who wants to make the mark on the way out of their career? You know, that's where I'm at with my career.
How focused are you, if all, on life after fighting? I mean, obviously many fans know you from the adult entertainment world. In fact, I think a lot of people know the status of your career as an adult performer and content creator. I think that's officially over. The last time you were on the show, you basically said you had no involvement whatsoever. But what do you plan on doing after MMA?
Well, what I'm going to do after MMA, you know, right now I'm focusing on the October 15th. Who knows if there's going to be another fight after that? I'd love to fight Dada 5000, but no way will I look past Dave Huckabee. However, you know, like as far as like the porn thing, the acting career that I, with the participation in pornography and whatever that did in my life, I'm just grateful that I never caught a disease, not one disease. I have a clean bill of health. I can give clean blood work. I can go and I can move on. I have my integrity. The next step is to get this last fight out of the way and have that, and then worry about my career and setting it out. Like maybe be a trainer, be a mentor to people who are going through some hard times in their life. I'm really interested in working with young people and helping out people who are struggling in their lives and show them, hey, look, if you're having troubles in your life, there is a way out of this, you know, I get a lot out of training people. So, I mean, I'm probably looking towards something like that, you know.
To what extent does Dick Delaware represent the dark side of Aaron Brink?
He started the Dick Delaware. Dick Delaware, I give a rested piece to Dick Delaware. I'd be the porn star formerly known as Dick Delaware. Being in that industry, I don't regret it because I can use that era of my life to learn and to help others and to, you know, no matter what may have happened, I've seen the depths I've seen what that stuff does, and it just there's really nothing good about that industry other than the fact I've learned so many things and what to stay away from and what warning signs are and how damaging that can be to people's lives. That's to answer that question.
I mean, just a few more questions, and then we're going to move on to the huck of a fight. I know that some of the personal issues you had in the past seem to emerge during or following your life as an adult performer. Is it hard to step into that world without becoming consumed by it? I mean, can you go in and out of being both Aaron Brink and Dick Delaware, or must you keep them separate in some way?
That's a great question. Let me take a moment to reflect on that. Being Dick Delaware all that time, that was, I mean, it's impossible for me to be Dick Delaware and to be Aaron Brink. The balancing two careers was not possible. There's no way I can take seriously a fight. I was going and losing to guys, fighting guys on week's notice and doing stuff like that. Like that you can't go. And then also having the addiction that came with it, and just, it was just a big, huge mess. So yeah, the balancing the two, it was a real balancing act. It was not really, it wasn't feasible so much.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, you know, to bring this back to your fight career, were you in some ways unable to fully commit to being Aaron Brink, cage fighter, when you started to juggle the life of Dick Delaware, the adult performer?
Absolutely. That answer to that question, I would definitely say that I just couldn't go and fight on Saturday night. Like, hey, I get a call from a promoter. Hey, listen, you know, I just doing an adult scene, and you know, oh, as a matter of fact, I probably just used narcotics within a few days ago, so my body's detoxing right now. Yeah, I'll fight this weekend. It's just actually a bit of insanity. It's going to be different this
right.
time, and that it's going to be different this time. Happened about 20 times under the lights and cameras. You know, not talking about movie cameras. I'm talking about like fighting in front of a promotion. And, you know, Rage in the Cage in Arizona, mostly a Rage in the Cage. I would go and fight. I fought in King of the Cage. Every time I would fight in King of the Cage, it so happened that I was having horrible social issues and problems in my personal life. You know, and horrible showings in those, making very bad decisions that affected my fight career.
How much assessment of your status as a fighter have you had to do after the Loeffler loss? I mean, are you in a position where you need to reinvent yourself or simply recapture what you had before?
Well, the good news is this. I established there's a very long period that I learned some things about what to do. Preston Postal Scharf, it was giving me some really good training at ethics and some exercises to do with the ropes and stuff like that. And the shape I built, I learned all that stuff getting ready for Sean Loeffler. Now, I've taken what I've learned while getting ready for Loeffler, and then I mixed a little, hey, listen, Sean Loeffler and your coach, and hey, can I come to your facility and learn, and what did I do wrong? And I've just humbled myself. Now I've added a couple more things to that. I've added this round robin thing. That's one thing I'm doing that's huge over in the gym over at the compound. I've got a wide variety of sparring partners that are pushing me past failure. That's one thing that I wasn't good at dealing with is being in deep water before Loeffler, so I'm adding that to my regimen. I know that I'm going to have to deal with some deep water dealing with Dave Huckabaugh. He's got a lot to bring to the cage. So a lot of that's what I've added to. So I feel real good about this.
You know, from a fan's perspective, I would rather have Aaron Brink going for the knockout than someone playing it safe while their coaches scream to let their hands go. But having said that, you know, there's a difference between blowing out opponents in under 1 minute and walking into a big shot. And so that's a tightrope that you have to walk. There's no question about that. And, of course, you have a chance to erase the memory of the Loeffler performance pretty quickly with the fight that we've spoken about already against Dave Huckabaugh. Huckabaugh is known for being a hard-hitting heavyweight who was frequently the target of Dan Quinn's verbal attacks and attempt to bait him into a fight. What's your thoughts on, or first of all, how did this fight come about?
The Dave Huckabaugh fight was actually somebody proposed it. I think it was Ted Williams, and he offered the fight. And then I was that fight was basically brought up. It didn't have anything to do with Dan Quinn or like that. I have spoken to Dan Quinn about Dave Huckaba and asked him his thoughts on Dave Huckaba. And Dan Quinn, it was very honest. He's like, hey, listen, that dude's a tough guy, man. He's no joke. From Dan Quinn, who I know is an amazing boxer. You know, he's a kind of a counterpuncher and a very strategical boxer. But, you know, coming from Dan Quinn, if Dan Quinn's telling me somebody's legit, you know, I'm a believer. And I've watched a lot of tape on Dave Huckaba, and he's the real deal. So I'm bringing it. It's a good fight because we're going to go out there and we're going to stand with each other. You know, he's not somebody that's going to come out and submit me. I was, you know, worried with Sean Loeffler. Okay, I got to get this guy, put pressure on him. He's never been, you know, pushed, whatever. I got to get him on the ground, whatever. I don't have to do that with Dave Huckaba. He's going to come and fight with me. I think I can outstrike Dave Huckaba.
Well, let's talk about your perception of Huckaba, the fighter, someone who's been around the scene who I expect you may have crossed paths with in the past. Is he someone you dealt personally with in the past?
I've never met Dave Huckaba. I've seen his fights. I have a lot of respect for Dave Huckaba as a professional fighter. I don't know him personally. I've seen him in his interviews and stuff like that. He seems like a really classy guy, you know, and a family man, which I respect a lot. But as far as like going in there and fighting, his fighting style is a great style for a fight with me. He and I are boxers, heavy strikers. I've never really had somebody just stand in front of me, just, you know, and just box. I mean, sort of like Sean Loeffler's situation was very unfortunate, but I mean, as far as like Dave Huckaby and I feel like he and I are a much better match. Two big heavyweights slugging it out. He's a counterpuncher. I know he's gonna, you know, expect me to come bull rushing in and stuff like that. So, and you know what? I'm not gonna lie. I am gonna come out there and push. I'm gonna push the issue real quick, and we're gonna get right to it. And we're gonna exchange. There's gonna be fireworks. The smoke will clear, and the winner will be standing with his hands raised with the champion belt around his waist.
Well, both you and Dave are real veterans of the scene, and both of you guys have a staggering number of knockouts on your records, although I believe you have slightly more. Is this fight taking place at heavyweight?
This fight will be heavyweight. I've heard rumor that Dave Huckaba is about 250 pounds, 250, 260-ish. He's at the latter part of the heavyweight weight class, so he's a solid heavyweight. I will be coming in about 225 pounds, very, very lean and very agile and doing lots of sparring, so he can expect a real dogfight standing up.
Do you think heavyweight, I mean, because many people perceive that you had your best run at 205, where you were one of the stronger fighters on the scene at the time. Do you think a heavyweight fight favors Huckaba overall, or have you adjusted to the additional weight by now?
I think as far as like movement is concerned, standing up, a light heavyweight has an advantage striking over a heavyweight. The power is there. I have all the power of a heavyweight at 225. If I'm cutting down to 205, you know, there's times where I've lost a lot of power. But at 225, I have all the, you know, I have all the power that I have. But the main thing is I have all the timing, and I have, you know, a lot of the, you know, I'm used to the movement. I'm not going to be panicked. I'm not going to try to, you know, try to push it too much of the issue and then get caught coming in. That's what we're going to refix that program in my, you know.
You've had quite a few more fights than he has, and I think because of that and the perceived weight advantage, some people might consider him the favorite. He's coming off of a quick win over Pat Smith, and of course, as you mentioned, Pat Smith was then quickly KO'd by Sean Loeffler in that fight. How much do you take away from Huckaba's recent performances, both wins and losses?
You know, I can't really take anything away. I saw Dave Huckaba fight against David Mitchell. I saw his fight against Pat Smith. I mean, I think he outclassed Pat Smith. There wasn't even much of a fight. He just kind of just, you can say, relaxed, and Pat Smith was panicked and overwhelmed the entire time. So it wasn't a match. I'm going to be bringing a match for Dave Huckaba. I'm bringing professional boxing level stand-up. And I know that Dave Huckaba is no jiu-jitsu guy that's going to come run out and try to, you know, flying triangle. You know, we're going to be out there banging. So I don't take anything away from Dave Huckaba for the last fight. He's an amazing fighter. He's technical. He hits hard. He's fought at the top levels. He's fought in Bellator. He's been the world champion of Gladiator. So this guy's no joke.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about game plan for you in this fight? I mean, because I think a lot of people would like to see the return of Aaron Brink, the technical kickboxer in this matchup, maybe throwing shots in range and then moving in to try and finish it from the clinch or whatnot. But without giving away the game plan, I mean, how do you see this fight with Hakuba unfolding?
Well, it's really not a huge mystery what's going to end up happening between Dave Hakuba and I. I mean, it's not. I mean, I know that the guy can kick, so I'll be working on checking kicks. And so, like, stand up. He and I are going to bang it out, and we will take the center. We're both heavyweights. It's not like, you know, there's no advantage for anyone to go there and try to submit the other guy. We're going to bang it out. I owe it to the fans in that area, and so does he. Those are his fans, and I'm going to go up there, and I owe it to my fans in general in mixed martial arts to go out there and bring Aaron Brink from 2000 back, 2001 back here now. But actually, it has improved because now I have Sean the Destroyer Loeffler, who's an amazing, amazing coach, who's going to be there with me, walking me through this whole stand-up, this whole game. We're going stand-up, not just to give you what's going to be in the box of chocolates, but,
right.
This is what's going to happen. We're going to stand up with each other. We're banging.
Yeah, I'm hoping that Dan Quinn is listening to the show, possibly waiting in the wings to fight the winner. Do you feel like you might be cutting in on Dan's beef with Hakuba by taking this fight?
You know, I don't really know that Dan Quinn has a beef with Hakuba. I spoke to Dan about this. I'm not sure. I won't speak for Dan Quinn. I will give Dan that stand-up fight he's always wanted. Dan Quinn is a friend of mine. You know, I got love for Dan Quinn. He's a really good guy. I've spent some time with him at his house up in Sacramento. He's opened his home to me. We spent time hanging out together. He showed me around the town. You know, he's a real good guy. He did a little sparring, you know, with a little hand work. And you know what? I would give Dan Quinn that stand-up, just a boxing diet or whatever. It's MMA gloves. Just, I'm not afraid to stand up. I'm doing so much stand-up work. I would do that. I would let him have the win, the winner of us between, Dave Hakuba and myself.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, can you predict what would happen between Dan Quinn and Dave Hakuba, the 2016 version?
The 2016 version? I mean, I've spoke to Dan. I criticized Dan's his idea of coming out and letting people just punch on him. You don't let Dave Hakuba come out and punch you in the chin the way Dan lets people hit him and just kind of, you know, get slow start and get things started and see how it goes after he takes a few, maybe the guy will wear out. That's not going to work with Dave Hakuba. Dave Hakuba will knock your head off doing that. So I would say if that happens, then you would have Dave Hakuba being the winner. If Dan Quinn, he's a world-class boxer, so if he were to go out and work his game, get his sparring in, you know, then that could be different, you know. You know, personally, I know Dan. Dan's my friend, but, you know, as far as, like, you know, like I told you, the game plan of Dan Quinn in the past has not been the best idea going in and let somebody knock your head off, especially not Dave Hakuba.
Yeah, I'm sure our listeners are going to have a lot to say about this potential triple threat match. You can add Cal Warsham, Rick Vardell to the mix, and let's make a real battle royale here, folks. But seriously, with a win over one or the other, we could be faced with Aaron Brink versus Dave Hakuba or Dan Quinn part two in the rematch. Either way, I think the fans would really, really enjoy that. That'd be really something great to see in the future. That's really all I have, Aaron. I mean, I think it's going to be a really exciting fight coming up October 15th, which is it's a little more than 2 weeks away, maybe 3 weeks away now. It's really something special, and I think the fans over there are going to appreciate that. Do you have anything else that you want to say? Any sponsors or any social media sites that you want to give out?
I'd like to thank Wave Weapons Surfboards. I'd like to thank the Compound MMA, Sean Loeffler, Sean the Destroyer Loeffler, for all the help and all the sparring that I'm getting over there and all the work that I have. Those are my two huge ones right there is the Compound and Wave Weapons Surfboards. I'm sponsored by Wave Weapons, and I surf every day because of Wave Weapons. So thank you to both of you guys.
Awesome. Aaron, thanks a lot. Keep in touch, my friend. And if you speak to Dan, tell him I said hello. It's been a while since I spoke to him, and I wish him all the best.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on.
Take care, Aaron. All right, that was Aaron Brink here on Carson's Corner on Blog Talk Radio. Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. I would like to see a fight, the fight between Aaron and Dave. It makes sense. Both these guys are relatively the same age, same, you know, status in their career, although you can make an argument that Huckabee has fought Huckabee has fought in higher promotions, World Series of Fighting and Bellator, but you know, some of the guys that Aaron has fought, you know, that we've chronicled are on the rise. Sean Loeffler, for example. So that's an interesting dynamic to add to this fight. I don't have any personal interaction with Dave Huckabee, although I don't think Dave Huckabee, for some reason, I remember him saying something about our show years ago that indicated that he may not be a fan of Carson's Corner. It's really hard to believe that. And as far as Dan, you know, I haven't spoken to Dan in years. I think when I was back in 2013 and 2014, when Dan was in jail, I was doing interviews with Dan. You know, Dan would call me sometimes at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and I would record him, and it was great. But then, like, since then, it's been difficult to communicate with him. There was a couple times where Dan on Facebook was asking me, he was saying I work for the government or something like that. And, you know, so I don't know. I'm still friends with Dan on Facebook. Now, Dan is welcome anytime on this program. You know, we'll see what happens. I wish him all the best, and we'll see if he returns back to the ring. You know, I know a lot of people would be interested to see him fight Aaron Brink again. Yeah, so this guy, Sean Loeffler, has won 12 fights in a row, it looks like. And we're going to have to see how he does in the future, you know, fighting some of the big boys over at Bellator. And we'll see where he goes from here. Just a few things I want to talk about here before we wrap it up. We're only going to go for an hour here today. We were going to have Andy Wang on the show. Andy was supposed to call in last week, and he had to reschedule, and he obviously wasn't able to call in. And so we're trying to reschedule him for another rendezvous here on Carson's Corner. But you've got this documentary that's coming out. I don't know if anybody is keeping up with this, called The Hurt Business. I saw a trailer on it. It looks pretty interesting. It's going to be released in theaters on September 29th. And you've got a lot of people. It shows you a behind-the-scenes look as far as what MMA fighters go through. There are a lot of fighters that appear in this documentary. I'm not sure what new information we're going to get from this documentary. You know, I'm not sure, you know, what the angle is. The director has said that this is going to be an objective documentary. Okay, I don't know if there's going to be any type of theme to it, but I know for myself, I'll probably wind up seeing this documentary. It doesn't have any of the fajitas. It doesn't have anybody from the UFC brass, except maybe Bruce Buffer isn't on the show, and that's really it. I just don't know if they're really going to talk about the issues that we've talked about here on Carson's Corner and that Eddie has talked about on his show for a long time. But, you know, hopefully they'll have some good scenes and they'll be able to really highlight the misery that these MMA fighters are going through, and you know, both in terms of financial pay, in terms of health. You know, you can just look at many fighters, retired fighters, that because of the trauma they've experienced in the ring, and because of, you know, what they have to do to get to the weight that they have to fight at, they've had many problems, many medical problems, and a lot of this is still out. The jury is still out on the health of fighters and the impact that they're going to have to go through, or they're going to experience later on in life because of their fighting. And because it's still relatively a new sport and whatnot. So I hope that this film at least explores that. I know I saw a clip of Sarah McMahon talking about her daughter and you know, whether or not she's going to be there for her daughter. I don't know if she's talking about physically or probably physically, but just, you know, financially probably not. If I had to bet, it's really a shame because these fighters are living in squalor, man. They're living in squalor. People telling them what to do, man. I'm sorry, that's a bit of a Razor Ramon promo. I sometimes I'll watch Razor Ramon promos, or you know, it's a guilty pleasure of mine to go on YouTube and watch these like random clips, these wrestling clips, or just you know random YouTube videos. And you can remember the Razor Ramon promos back in the early 90s and late 80s. They were just classic. There was one promo where Scott Hall, Razor Ramon, was coming to the WWE, and he's talking about how people living in squalor 90 miles away, they're eating garbage, man, and people telling them what to do. Of course, he's talking about the paradise, the communist paradise in Cuba. And he's talking about how the WWE, nobody's going to tell Razor Ramon what to do in the WWE. So, you know, that's what these fighters are going through. And there was a documentary actually back in 2011, I think it was, called Fight Life, released by James Fang, who we had on the show right around the time that was released. And he did a good job chronicling the misery that fighters go through and just how little pay that they have, they receive for their fights. And still, you know, fast forward 5 years later, and it's still the same thing. We're still having the same conversation, although you're starting to get a little more fighters come out now. But still, you can ask Eddie Goldman. You could go to listen to his show with Rob Macy. And you could see that we're no really, I mean, in my opinion, we're no closer to having any type of fighter union, fighter collective bargaining than we were, you know, 5 years ago. It's really, really unfortunate. But that's just the way it is here. That's the way it is in the system. All right. Tomorrow night you have the Ultimate Fight Night in Brazil. And I don't have any information in front of me. In fact, my computer has frozen. But there's some interesting fights. And, you know, normally I don't make an effort to see an Ultimate Fight Night because I work and I just don't have time. But I'll make an effort if the card is interesting to me. And there are some fights, best I can remember, on this card that are interesting. I mean, namely, you've got Chris Cyborg fighting Landsberg. I forget the lady's first name, from Sweden. I think she's 6-1, and you know, this is going to be another showcase fight for Cyborg, and this is her first, I believe, main event slot for the viewers here in the United States and around the world. And the big story about this, and I had an opportunity to see, I don't know if it was a UFC embedded or if it was a video by Punishment Athletics or you know one of these outfits, her weight cut and just what she goes through. And that's really been a story because, you know, as we understand that Cyborg walks around at 170, 175, in that range. And, you know, she's a very, very big person. She gets a lot of flack for, you know, looking the way she does and for you know, testing positive for steroids a few years ago. And you know, she has a really tough time fighting at 145, let alone fighting at 140. And the UFC, you know, their weight division is 135. And they have, of course, the 115 women's strawweight division. You've got the women's bantamweight division at 135. And they, you know, their idea is that they want Cyborg to come down to 135, and they want to have her fight at 140 to get comfortable, and then she'll go down to 135, and she'll fight a lot of people at that weight division, a lot of females that would make the UFC a lot of money, and you know, maybe Cyborg would make a lot of money too. You know, Ronda, there's so many fights. Holly, whoever Cyborg fights at 135 would be a really, really exciting fight because of the competition out there, because of the talent level at that weight division, whereas you don't have anybody really that fights at 145 or 140 in the women's world of MMA. I mean, you had Misha a couple, was it last year or the year before, said that she would fight, you know, Cyborg at 140, but there's no title. There's really no really meaning unless Cyborg could come down to 135. And I really felt bad for her. I mean, everybody seems to really kind of feel bad for her because of the potential damage that she's doing to her body at the beginning of this week, just not more than a few days ago. I mean, she was weighing in at 166, you know, right on the scale. And then she weighs in at 141. She weighed in this morning at the maximum weight allowance for the fight at 141. So she cuts 25 pounds in like 2 days. It's unbelievable. And then you look at the weigh-in pictures, you look at it, she looks just absolutely just horrendous. And, you know, you feel bad for these fighters, because somebody like this who, you know, is 29, she's probably the same age as Ronda. She's going to have, you know, 4, 5, 6 more years left, and who knows, she may not even have that. And then what's going to happen to her? What type of health impact is she going to have? And it's really, really unfortunate. But, you know, that's what these fighters do, and that's what the fans really, really appreciate. They you know, look at it as a spectacle. You know, this is essentially a spectacle, you know, for all of us, and you know, very, very public weight cut and issues that she has. It's all adding to the carnivals. As Dada 5000 says, you know, the clowns change, but the carnival never does. The carnival stays the same and whatnot. And, you know, I just really, really, really feel bad for her. And you know, I hope that she's able to be okay and be healthy, and because she seems like a very nice person. But the thing that some fighters and some fans out there are saying is they're putting this all on Cyborg. How, you know, she is heavy. You know, when she doesn't have her fights, and she's in between fights, she balloons up to 160 or 170. She can't stay around the 155 pound range, to where if she could stay around 155, she could cut down to 135, and there wouldn't be any problems and whatnot. And then, you know, you look at her, and you look at, she doesn't look like she has any type of real body fat. She did a lot of cardio in the lead up to this fight. I mean, we're talking about, she ran like 10 miles a day or something ridiculous like that, you know, 50 miles a week, and yet she still can't cut to make the weight. And, you know, I don't know what the UFC should do here, because you have other fighters that struggle to make the weight. I mean, I remember when Misha was fighting Amanda, there was pictures of her, like, she looked like she was dead, you know, on the floor. I mean, it's really, really become a problem. And, you know, I know certain organizations, like One Fighting Championship, they've precautions that they have, you know, made sure that fighters weigh within a certain percentage of their contracted weight before a certain amount of time. I don't have the rules in front of me, but they've actually, ever since one of their fighters died from issues relating to cutting weight, they've really done their diligence here. And, you know, I don't know if the UFC has done their diligence. They do have, you know, somebody looking over this, they're overseeing this, and you've got USADA involved with the regulation of what can and cannot be taken to lose weight and all that stuff. And so, it's very, very interesting, but it's almost a sad display that we're seeing right now from someone that's trying to make a living, trying to make money, trying to survive, you know, and create some sort of retirement, which is not likely in this system. You know, although Cyborg is the Invicta champion, I believe, and so Cyborg, you know, could fight, and maybe she still can make the same money Invicta, but she won't be able to make the big money unless she goes to the 135 division, which doesn't look like it's going to be the case. So you really, really feel bad because it doesn't look like she could fight at 135, and looks like she's going to be pretty much in limbo for the next, you know, 4 or 5 years. I mean, unless the UFC wants to make a fight of the catch weight with a bigger name. But, you know, who knows? Like I said, it doesn't really have any type of implications because there's no title that's around. Also, you have on this fight card Roy Nelson versus Bigfoot Silva. You know, Roy Nelson thinks he's going to be fighting for another 5 or 6 years. Who knows? He's sort of an anomaly with his body type and his durability. And whatnot. So he could be. You know, I think he'll beat Silva. I think Silva's really at the end of his career. He just hasn't looked good. And, you know, with all his problems and all that. So I think it's going to be a good victory for Roy Nelson. I think Paul Felder is also on this card. I forget who he's fighting. I like to see him fight, but there was at least one or two other fights on this card that I was interested in, and I'll probably wind up watching this tomorrow when I get home from work. I am so fat, ladies and gentlemen. I'm like all the way up to like 295 now. I got to tell you, anybody that's followed the show knows that, you know, I've gone up and down in weight over the past 6 years. There was a time where I was up to well over 300 pounds. And then, you know, back 3 years ago, I lost a bunch of weight. I got down to like 230. And, you know, you could look at pictures of me online and, you know, you could see I had really, really muscular legs. I still do a pretty big, you know, very defined legs. I got huge quads and real, real huge calves. And I can lift a lot of weight with my legs. And I'm fairly strong. I mean, I could. The last time I was at the gym, I did over about 900-pound leg press multiple times. I mean, probably 15 times, and it really was nothing, you know. But I go through these periods in my life where I just eat and eat and eat, and I can't stop it. Like, I can't stop my destructive consumption of fast food, and so now I have. You know, I took a blood test the other day. I got, you know, all the cholesterol issues and this, that, and the other thing. And I don't know. I just can't seem to really regulate my eating habits. And it's a very, very complicated issue because, you know, there's things going on in my brain. There's probably some sort of circuitry issues with, you know, the consumption of fast food. It's like a drug. It releases you know, chemicals in the brain, you know, pleasure chemicals in the brain. There's, you know, societal issues too. You know, the rates of depression in this country are up. People are desperate. You know, we're, even though the statistics tell us differently, well, we're still more of a violent society. I think now the type of violence that we're seeing, you know, people leaving bombs on the streets in New York City, and we're, you know, not too far from me in friggin' Elizabeth, New Jersey, where I used to train, actually. I used to do MMA training there, and it's really, really crazy, you know, society. And I look at everybody around me, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I'm just too much of a cynic, but I don't see anybody that's really thriving. I don't see anybody that's really thriving and doing well. And if you are thriving and doing well, then, you know, you're well adjusted to a sick society, you know, bordering on what the folks over at the Zeitgeist movement say. It's just, you know, I don't think that a large majority of Americans are doing well in this society, in this country. And it also translates to MMA fighters. I mean, do you think MMA fighters are happy? You know, do you think that a majority of these fighters on the roster, even the ones that are successful and even the ones that have long careers, do you think they're happy with what – do you think that their expectations they should have diverge from what they actually have? You know, do you think the folks like Ally Quinta, who is talking about how he can't fight at UFC 205, it's not worth him to fight, it's not worth him you know, getting paid so little, and he's better off changing his career, he's better off becoming, you know, a real estate agent. Do you think that that represents the exception or that represents the norm? Because I think it represents the norm. I really do. I mean, you'll have people, you know, people like Mickey Gall. I'm not insulting Mickey Gall at all. I mean, you know, he really destroyed CM Punk. But you'll have him, you know, people like him that are young and just they're eager to get into the UFC spotlight, and they're in the now, and they're not really concerned with, or they haven't really experienced the hardships brought on by, you know, the MMA pay structure and you know, the way fighters are treated. But for the most part, I mean, it's really a sad state of affairs in the sport. It really is. And it's not just, it is MMA. I mean, in MMA, I think the athletes are the lowest paid athletes. I mean, certainly relative to boxing, and this has been empirically proven. You know, the NFL players, you have, you know, half of all NFL players filing bankruptcy, or, you know, it's the same way. It's not, you know, there are other issues, but I don't really think it's useful to focus on individual cases, because you know, just as a whole, it's just not looking good for anything, for anybody, you know. And I just think it's disappointing, and I think that you know, people like myself and others are interested in the welfare of the fighters. And I think to a certain extent, all MMA, you know, podcasters or the so-called MMA media, they're interested in the welfare of the fighters. But there's different approaches that you could take, and there's different sets of principles that everybody has that leads them to do certain things and not do certain things. You know, I know for myself, I couldn't do it. I couldn't talk about the shadow that the UFC casts on, you know, everything else. I really couldn't do that. So that's my little, you know, my rambling about all these different issues. We're coming up on 10 o'clock here on Carson's Corner. Let me tell you what we got planned here, hopefully, in the next couple weeks or so. We're trying to get Tim Kennedy on the program. You know, he actually responded to me a couple, like last week, and he said he'd be able to come on the show. I haven't had time to email him back, but hopefully we'll get him on the show before UFC 205, which he's fighting Rashad Evans in New York, so that should be a very, very good fight. Also going to try to get the Rage in a Cage matchmaker on the program. He's emailed us and told us that he would love to come on the show. So we're going to get him on the program. And then we'll see what else happens. You know, we'll see who else we can get on this great podcast, which has been in existence since 2006. 10 years, folks. Eddie just had his 10-year anniversary earlier in the year. I was on that show, one of the shows that he did, his 10th anniversary of No Holds Barred. And it's the 10th anniversary of this show. Yes, it is. I'm doing it for 10 years. I don't have the exact date that it started, but it definitely started in 2006. And it's been fun. It really is. It's been fun. I've had an opportunity to cover a lot of events and interact with a lot of fighters over the years. And, you know, we've had our little place when it comes to interviewing people and interviewing fighters, and that's something I think we do exceptionally well here on the show, and it's our way of contributing. It really is. However small it is, there needs to be dissent out there. And, you know, you need to have individuals like myself who are unbound, you know, not beholden to anyone or any promoter, either directly or indirectly, because a lot of these podcasters, a lot of the so-called MMA media, they're beholden. They are, whether they realize it or not. I mean, they always tend to talk about what the UFC, you know, has on the agenda. You know, they always tend to talk about what this guy said or what that guy said, the gossip or, you know, this and that. And, well, they would argue, oh, that's because our fans want that. Our fans, you know, they want to hear about, you know, what Conor McGregor said or what Dana White did or this and that and the other thing. Well, I believe that you have to rearrange the market. I believe that, you know, by constantly trying to seek approval from the market and trying to you know, accommodate, you know, individuals and people that may be brainwashed in the sense that you're not really really contributing at all, you know. You know, if you feel it's important and you can justify why it's important, then you should talk about it, okay? Then you should, you know, you should recreate the market, not allow the market to create you. And that's just something that I know other people abide by that notion. I really do. And, you know, if that means that, you know, you're going to, you know, be poor while you do this, and you're going to, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, how much is your principles worth? How much, you know, to me, you know, I have certain principles and, you know, certain things I will and will not do for any type of game. I really do believe that. Although, you know, look, I am, you know, tempted, you know, if I got a ridiculous offer, there is some part of me that attached to the idea of notoriety, okay, in any way, shape, or form. I won't lie to you about that, you know, but that's the way I am, and so be it. All right, so that's it for this week's edition of Carson's Corner. Big thanks to Aaron Brink for coming on the show. We wish him the best of luck against Dave Huckaba on Gladiator Challenge October 15th. Make sure to keep up with me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You can follow me here on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And make sure to, if you're into radical politics, revolutionary politics, politics and political discussions of issues that face the working class from a non-corporate, non-status quo, non-capitalist standpoint, non-election standpoint, make sure to tune in to Carson's Corner with the Election Boycott Advocates every Monday from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. My host, Christopher Allen Driscoll, and I will give you a much-needed radical perspective on issues that obviously you're not going to hear about on the corporate capitalist media. Okay, very, very important show, and I want to encourage everyone to listen to, participate in every Monday from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio, Carson's Corner with the Election Boycott Advocates, folks, okay? Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect. Thank you.